listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. That is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Riding solo today as the Bills get back to training camp over at St. John Fisher University. Do have some injury notes for today. Cole Bishop quad is not practicing today. There are also some vet rest days. Deion Dawkins, Greg Rousseau, and Daquan Jones. If you, though, did miss the news from yesterday, some good news, albeit not perfect news, for Bills rookie corner Max Hairston. He did suffer an LCL sprain. Means it's likely going to be a few weeks for him, but the ACL is intact, and that was the initial fear, is his season over with before it even can begin? No, it is not. He will be down a few weeks at least, but there's a good hope that he'll be there at least by week one, if not a little bit later, or even a little bit earlier. We'll see how that goes. The Bills have not had any confirmed timeline on that. I do want to start with that, though. We'll touch base with Sal Capaccio coming up at 10:30, but I want to touch base on Hairston because, yes, it is very good news for him that ultimately he will not miss his entire rookie season. But I don't want to sit here and say that it is the best news ever. The best news would have been, I just tweaked something, he'll be back in 2 days, right? Which can be a little cautious, but he's going to be back in no time. Missing a few weeks could really put a bit of a damper on his rookie year. And we as Bills fans, I mean, especially looking at the secondary, should know all too well what missing 3 weeks in camp will do to a guy's rookie season. Just look at Cole Bishop, who, by the way, is, as I mentioned, down again with a quad injury. We'll see if that's long-lasting or it's just going to be a few days for him. He missed 3 weeks of camp last year with a shoulder issue. And then his entire rookie year, in a safety room that kind of was begging for him or somebody to grab hold of it, he struggled to get playing time until late in the season, outside of injuries, of course, because he did start that Houston game, but that was due to injuries. It really wasn't until late in the season where he was able to get extended playing time. You look at the snap count for him in terms of percentages. It grows up until week four. He hits 100, and then it's 0, 4.1%, 0, 1.6, 7.8, 0, 0, 0, and then it starts to increase more, 59.5, 100, 100, 57.8, and then he eventually does play in the AFC Championship game. But he struggled to get playing time when he fell behind just 3 weeks in training camp. And I do wonder if maybe that's where we're going to start heading with Hairston. Not an overall redshirt year, but knowing already, having talked to Sal a few times, that Trey White had really grabbed hold of that cornerback two spot, that he had been playing really, really well, you know, having multiple good days in a row, stacking good days in a row. He was really performing. And while Hairston wasn't, it wasn't anything bad, Trey White had really taken the cornerback two spot by the horns. Now you do have to wonder, what is the rookie season going to look like for Max Hairston? I still think there's absolutely a shot that really nothing changes. Because for me, the feeling always was, at least once camp got rolling, all right, here we go. Trey White will start the season. We'll get to maybe the midpoint, week 7 to like 10, and you'll all of a sudden just see the flip. Hairston was starting more, and he's now just cornerback 2. And he's opposite Christian Benford. And Trey White just becomes a really, really good third option on the outside. That could absolutely still happen. Ultimately, for some players, it has actually been good for them to just have to sit back, watch, let the game slow down. I mean, famously, Josh Allen. But he got to play most of, if not all of camp in the preseason games. He got a lot of reps. Goes in, I mean, his first start, what, is week two? But he gets hurt in that Houston game, has to sit a few weeks, comes back, plays much better. And I think he's openly acknowledged it really helped him to just have to sit down and let the game kind of come to him. And since then, he's been on an upward trajectory seemingly every single year. That could absolutely still be in Harrison's view. 100%. I don't want to make it sound like this is going to be a disaster for him and that this is already over. Because it's not at all. But having just watched Cole Bishop go through this last year, miss just 3 weeks of camp, and ultimately never able to really grab hold of a starting spot until late in the year in a safety room that it was certainly not the cornerback room this year. The cornerback room this year, Christian Benford might arguably want to be one of the most underrated players in all of football, not even getting any votes on that ESPN top 10 player list. None. And then Trey White, who has looked very good, and he himself was starting to come on late in the year with Baltimore after recovering from a number of his injuries. That room is in a much better spot. I'm not saying this is as nervousness towards the cornerback room. It's not that at all. It is much more nervousness for Harrison, the player, in the short term. Because I think in the long term, he'll, again, be fine. His ACL is intact. It's a knee injury. You never like to see that. It was non-contact. That's not great. But I think for the most part, he'll be just fine. But for a team that has not hit a lot of home runs in rounds one and two, and it has been a struggle for them to really get key contributions from early draft picks, this isn't maybe the best sign. And it's nothing that Bean or Harrison could have done. Nothing. It's no one's fault. It happens. But like stacking good practices, we have somewhat started to stack not the best first-round picks for the Bills. We have started stacking those. Dalton Kincaid, good rookie year. Not great, but good rookie year. But he fell behind guys like Sam Laporta. Second year, inconsistent, to be honest. And really left you wanting more, and he also deals with injuries. Kyer Elam, big reason why Max Harrison was drafted by the Bills at all, is a complete whiff and a miss. And now Harrison. Nothing has gone on with Harrison at all. But they are starting to stack where they're not getting key contributions from their first and second round picks a lot. And this is where, and I've mentioned, I don't want to put a lot of pressure on this rookie class because this is a talented roster. And Sal's mentioned it. Most of us have mentioned it. They're kind of at a point where they can't really have a lot of camp battles. Most of their starters are somewhat solidified. Cornerback two being one of the few spots where there is a real battle. But imagine where they're at if Elam hits. If Dalton Kincaid is a Sam Laporta type addition for them. They're in a far, far different spot than where they're at now. And even now, it's still good. But you need to hit on these young guys. They need to give you key contributions. And again, and I'll say this again, I'm not saying that Harrison is not going to. But having just gone through this last year with a player in the secondary, it does make me pause a bit in, okay, what's going to happen now? Where are we sitting with this? He's going to miss key reps, obviously. Now, that could lead to guys like Dorian Strong really popping off. And maybe they did it again in getting a really good cornerback late in the draft. But I'm not banking on that. I bank far more, and it's still not everything, but I bank far more on your first and second round picks being huge additions for you. In the short term, and maybe even the long term of this season, this may be fine. Trey White could probably come right in. He's looked good. He's got to be cornerback too. He doesn't have to be the main guy. Benford, from all reports, has looked amazing in camp to start. Should probably be fine. But I'm still sitting here by the midpoint of the year wanting to see Harrison take that role over. And that, no question, he's cornerback too with Benford. And even arguably, he'll start to show off his talent and maybe they just have dual cornerback ones. That's the hope, isn't it? That you just say Benford and Hairston, and it's just they're a duo. You just know it. We'll see. We will absolutely see on this. But it is very good news for him that his season is not gone. Because at least for me, I was sitting here thinking, it's done. It's over with. We'll move on. But already kind of taking it on the chin a little bit of like, it's another first-round pick potentially that they're just not getting enough out of. I know they pick late. But you see teams all the time pick late and get key contributions from guys. Injury's not his fault. But I was already kind of accepting that. So it's great news that it's only going to be a few weeks. He may even be suited up, ready to go for Baltimore. But we don't know. And it is something that has kind of been, you know, gnawing at the back of my head a little bit. Of they need key contributions from first and second round picks. They need them. And that's where Cole Bishop being down again with a quad injury. It sounds like he's having a good camp. Him and Rapp seem to be a really good match. Good. He needs to be on the field. It's the old adage, but it's right. Your best ability is your availability. It's going to be curious. It's going to be really, really fun to see how this goes in the preseason. I mentioned it last night on the nightcap. This is actually one of those preseasons I'm interested in watching because there are enough storylines going on to keep me interested. Doesn't have to necessarily be starters, but I look around and I do see guys like Trey White. Okay, what's he looking like? How much is he even going to play in the preseason, especially now with Hairston going down? There's a good chance he doesn't play much. Your cornerback two go. So now it becomes Dorian Strong. It also becomes, and I've mentioned this a lot, even before the draft, the big guys that they've added on the defensive line, TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson, whose name has not really been brought up a lot for camp. I've heard a lot from TJ Sanders. I've heard a lot of Deion Walker. I've heard very little of Landon Jackson, and it's been somewhat my fault. I've very rarely brought him up. I've kind of forgotten about him at times, even though he's picked before Deion Walker. I'm curious to see how those two look, because as I've mentioned a few times, if they hit on just one of those three guys and they make the defensive line better just by them, and then you add in the other additions like Bosa, Hoyt, and Ogunjobi, this team should be back in the AFC Championship. This team should be in a Super Bowl because that's all that's holding them back, really, has been the defensive line, has been the lack of pass rush. So if they get that, they should be in a better spot. They were getting by last year pretty well with Rasul Douglas looking very weak at cornerback too. Kyer Elam looking at times unplayable. A shaky safety room. And a linebacker room that went through a lot of injuries. Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard both dealing with issues last year. They still made it to the AFC Championship. All reports from camp have Matt Milano being awesome. And maybe even back to his all-pro self. Trey White looks really good at corner too. So I can almost deal with a shaky safety room again if maybe Bishop is not 100% and he doesn't maybe take that next step because of injuries or what have you, if the defensive line is improved. So that is going to be something, of course, I'm going to be keeping an eye on. Palmer and Coleman. I listened this morning, Albert Breer, he visited Bills camp on Tuesday, and he'd mentioned some of his takeaways, and Keon was one of them. And he mentioned a player that I hadn't thought of, you know, to maybe compare Keon to or even really look at as like the role they'd want Keon to be in. But he mentioned Marcus Colston of the Saints. And, you know, if you remember that name, he was a big key contributor on their Super Bowl winning team back in 09. But he was a guy out of Hofstra. He was 6'5", 225. He was a seventh round pick and most assumed he would transition to tight end. And yet in his rookie year, he's over 1,000 yards. Peyton saw something in him. And he was one of their key guys, one of their most consistent receivers of that era from the word go. And you look at Keon Coleman's build, 6'4", like 210. It's right around there. I don't think anyone ever said he's going to be a tight end. You know, the thing you heard with Keon was he's going to be a big slot. So maybe that's what it becomes. Is maybe it's a little bit of a Marcus Colston role. That could be very interesting for him. And from all reports, he's starting to stack good practices together, which is huge for him. The consistency is maybe the key thing for his development. He's never going to be a separation artist. And most of us, I believe, have kind of come to terms with that and accepted that, and that's fine. But if he can be a guy that just uses his physicality to get that little bit more open, and he starts reeling in more and more passes, his catch percentage goes up from, what was it, 50%? Could be massive going forward for him. We mentioned it the other day, me and Derek. Air Raid Buffalo on Twitter kind of put up a stat line for him that, you know, could be for year two, combining literally his stats from last year and Mac Hollins' stats from last year. And it's like 60 catches, a little over 900 yards, and I think it was 9 touchdowns. If he puts up that stat line, I don't think anyone's complaining about him. No, he's not a 1,000-yard receiver. No, he's not in line for a Pro Bowl. But to be fair, if that's the stat line and they win 13 games again and Allen's a 4,000-yard passer and he's completing like 66% of his passes and he's got like 35 touchdowns, no one's going to care. That'll work. And if that does happen, if that's his stat line, I imagine Josh Palmer also really worked. Khalil Shakir continued to be that guy in the slot. And so those two, Palmer and Keon, are going to be guys that I'm absolutely going to keep an eye on. This preseason should be interesting because there's enough young guys that maybe could play key roles that'll be fighting for spots. We'll be playing in games. And so we'll see how that goes. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on today. Also today, we do have the Hall of Fame game, which is a game that up until 3 days ago, I had zero plans on watching. Absolutely zero plans on watching. Outside of, you know, the ceremonial two drives. It's the American dream. You get excited for the Hall of Fame game. Everyone tweets out, football's back, blah, 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 blah. And they're technically right because it is the first game in months. You turn it on. You're looking around the stadium. You're going, this is really cool. There's a lot of, you know, majesty to it. There's a lot of, like, aura, lore, whatever you want to say about, you know, Canton Stadium. And then you start watching the game and you're like, cool, there's like no one here that I want to watch. There's absolutely no one here I want to watch. And then the few guys that you were like, I can get into this a little bit. Like, he was a rookie. He's exciting. Oh, and he's sitting after two drives. And you turn it right off. And then you turn on NFL Network the next day. You see some of the highlights that went on in the third and fourth quarter. And you went, cool. I'm glad I didn't watch it. That was going to be me. Until I found out that Trey Lance was starting for the Chargers. Now, he could play the two drives and be done. That could absolutely happen. But I'm at least going to check Trey Lance out. And Lance is not a quarterback I've particularly talked a lot about. I think most people that have listened to me know that I was a big fan of his when he was drafted in 20. But, you know, going back to when he was drafted, or when he was actually at North Dakota State, that was in 2019 when he has his big season. Doesn't throw a pick, has 1,000 yards rushing, double-digit touchdowns. He has like 28 like passing touchdowns. He was a really exciting prospect. And at the time, for me personally, I liked Josh Allen a lot through his first 2 years. There were things to like. I did not love Josh Allen through his first 2 years. But there were things to love, don't get me wrong. The hurdles, he was a physical presence, the running was awesome, and every now and then he'd have a pass where you're like, man, if he could just harness that, we have got something here. But through the first 2 years, it was very up and down. 2019 is somewhat, in a way, sort of his ascension, but he still wasn't a perfect passer by any means. I'd argue he still wasn't even a very good passer. He was okay, he was good, he was fine, he was serviceable. But going into 2020... they make the move for Stephon Diggs, and maybe take yourself back to how you felt going into week one. We had no preseason. Training camp was a little spotty here and there about like what we could actually get because of the pandemic. There was really no on if Josh Allen had taken this gigantic step that he ultimately did. And so for me, being a kid of the drought, that raising me, molding me, in a way, I was always sort of prepared for the other shoe to drop. I was sort of prepared for Josh Allen's potential, his progression, what have you, to halt. And for them to go back to not being a playoff team. And with that, it didn't matter if the Bills were going to do it or not. I was always prepared for another quarterback. And that 2020 draft was going to be the first one where it's like, okay, this might be legit. Like, we'll see if they actually do it. And Lance was the guy that I kind of zeroed in on. Now, he ultimately doesn't play more than a single game in 2020. They have a showcase game at North Dakota State, but they don't have a season since 2019. Adding in also his pro attempts since 2019, he has had 461 passing attempts. I think Sneaky Joe's had this a lot.
That's it. He sits most of 21 with the 49ers. He's finally the starter in 22. He hurts himself in the second game of that season, and it's effectively all she wrote. He's gotten no reps. And it's something I've talked a lot about with college quarterbacks over the last like year or so, that you're seeing a lot of these guys who maybe could have left college, leave it like at the high point. Drew Aller, Penn State, was sort of this guy. You know, it's a weak quarterback class. Aller's got all the you know, everything you want. 6'5", 220, bazooka of an arm, can move, what have you. But he stays. Why? These guys all want to get more reps. They want to get more starts. Cade Klubnik of Clemson, same thing. It's why you also hear Arch Manning. I mean, Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, even mentioned it. He's probably going to stay 2 years. Like, it's not even worth talking about. They all want more reps, more pass attempts, more times to screw up and to fix things before they make the jump to the NFL. Anthony Richardson is maybe the latest example of this. He had, what, 13 starts at Florida, didn't pass the ball all that much, and didn't do it particularly well when he did. And then kind of almost like Trey Lance, has an exceptionally short leash with Indianapolis. He's also been dealt with injuries, and he's had that tough time, but he's also been pulled, and the Colts have seemingly been very short with him at times. He's done also some ridiculous things like pulling himself out of a game because he's tired and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. But these guys needed more reps. They needed more time to marinate in college. Lance, due to circumstance, doesn't get anything in 20. I wonder what he looks like as a quarterback if he plays all of 2020. Gets a full season there, maybe throws like 350 passes. They were much more of a run-heavy team, but he would have probably played 15, 16 games that year. Maybe throws 350 more passes. And what does he look like? He's still probably a first-round pick. He's not going to all of a sudden collapse in that second season. He's probably a first-round pick again. And maybe he gives more of a fight in his rookie year to start. And so then he's getting more reps there. So what does Lance look like? I have no idea. But we talk a lot about that with quarterbacks going to the right spots, how much it matters to them. It's also the same thing, too, of college guys going to the right spot to get them the most development, the most reps. That's why I think the college game, you're going to start seeing 4-star quarterbacks, 5-star quarterbacks. They're going to transfer more. Maybe to smaller schools, but at least they're going to transfer to some of these maybe smaller Power 4 schools because they'll get starts, they'll get reps, they'll go through adversity. That's a big thing. You look around the NFL, at the pro quarterbacks, where they come from. They don't come from the Alabamas of the world, the Georgias of the world. Fewer from Clemson. They come from these small schools, smaller schools. They're not necessarily always competing for national championships. They're just trying to survive, get them through adversity. They have to struggle more, and it ends up actually working a lot of the time with NFL quarterbacks, and it's going to be a thing in college. But Trey Lance, Anthony Richardson, probably guys that are drafted because of Josh Allen, but Allen also got multiple seasons starting at Wyoming, where Lance got one at North Dakota State, and for all intents and purposes, Richardson got one at Florida. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get a look in at camp when we come back. Sal Capaccio will join the show from St. John Fisher University. I'm Zach Jones, hanging here solo on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones riding solo today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. A little bit of Sabres news, as the team has officially announced they have signed goaltender Devin Levi to a 2-year contract, an average annual value of just over $812,000. That seems remarkably cheap. Good for them to get that done. I imagine Levi is going to be spending most of, if not all of, next year in Rochester as he continues to marinate down in the AHL. To remind you, the coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Figo Car and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We'll be hearing from Sal Capaccio here in just the next few minutes. Get a word in on practice today. There were some good injury updates as well. Dawson Knox, and Elijah Moore both appear to be back at practice, more back in pads. He was dealing with some leg soreness. Very excited to see what he could look like in the preseason as well. I'm not losing my touch for the Elijah Moore cult. I'm still with you guys. I am just starting to wonder how much
he's actually going to be able to produce on the Bills. They really do like to spread the ball around. I think they have better personnel to do it better this year. I think we could see the passing rate on first down go up this year compared to what it was last year. I think you can honestly see Allen enter back into 4,000 yards passing and 30-plus touchdown passes because I like the personnel. But I do wonder how much he's going to be able to do. This is a guy that would have finished second last year on the Bills in terms of catches, but also you had a team in Cleveland, partially because of how bad they were and how much they had to play down. They had almost, I think, 125 more passes as a team than Josh Allen did last year. And so, yeah, he gets around, I think, 101, 102 targets, 61 catches. I just don't know where that really is going to happen, especially Coleman is putting together, it appears to be a very good camp. Josh Palmer has looked very good. There is still Khalil Shakir. I imagine they are going to want to try to do anything with Kincaid to get him going, especially if he's healthy. They've got to in this third year. This is where tight ends especially start to hit their groove, is in this year three window. That's where he is. Let's hope, hopefully he's healthy. And then I kind of it sort of leaves me with, okay, so it's all of a sudden it's Elijah Moore or Curtis Samuel. Now Moore can spend a little bit more time on the outside. I think he spent like 40% of his snaps last year on Cleveland on the outside. Samuel is almost completely just a slot receiver. But ultimately, we don't really know like what it's going to be. Moore was still only signed to a one-year contract, and it was very late in the process. So is he really all that important? I think he can be very, very good. I genuinely believe that. And I get almost stir crazy thinking about how good I think he can be with Josh Allen at quarterback. But they've also got guys that have been in the system longer that have built more of a reputation or more of a rapport with Allen. And they've also spent bigger on guys like Josh Palmer who maybe haven't yet, but I think they have more clear plans for him going forward. And Palmer is somebody too. I didn't spend a lot of the offseason getting that excited about him because you looked at the last 2 years and you kind of thought, okay, sure, I love the separation stats, but he had Herbert, you know, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams aren't necessarily world beaters for him to try to get past. And yet, he comes into camp and the feeling is pretty good. Is he going to be a guy that probably puts up 1,200, 1,300 yards receiving? No, likely not. Could it happen? Sure. He's 25, young. In his second season, he looked like he was completely ascending, and then injuries, and Greg Roman kind of ruined that. But I'm not going to bank on that. I am banking, though, on they've got more consistent guys. Last year, that was maybe their biggest problem in the passing game. Allen was still phenomenal, but it was more consistency. Now I think they do have much more consistency at the wide receiver position. That may hold Elijah Moore back. Let's go, though, to the Wester Hotline and to St. John Fisher University. Sal Capaccio joins us now. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning, guys. How are you? Yeah, rain held off just in time. It went away for the 9:45 a.m. practice to start, and the team has been on the field ever since. We got an update on some new players who are not out here. Let me get the list. I'm sure you guys have mentioned them. Not practicing today would be Cole Bishop. And then, that was it. Cole Bishop was the only one. Hayden Harris was waived with a hamstring injury. But we do have a vet rest day today for Deion Dawkins, Greg Rousseau, and Daquan Jones. And good news, Dawson Knox is out here catching passes. And so is Tyrell Shavers.
There we go. So on Shavers, Sal, because I was just mentioning Elijah Moore there. Shavers has sort of been like your guy for this. Like I think the last two now camps, like he's sort of been your guy. What have you seen from him this morning as he comes back? May have lost Sal. That's a shame. We'll hopefully get Sal back here in just a few minutes. I do want to talk to him about Tyrell Shavers because he had one of the more fun plays of the season last year against New England. And he's somebody that I really like a lot, to be perfectly honest. It's sort of the same thing with Elijah Moore. And I've heard the morning guys talk about this too. It kind of just comes down to bodies. He's probably an NFL receiver. He looks the part in every way. They just kind of have too many guys. No guy that's necessarily the number one, but they do have a lot of guys. That is certainly for sure. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on the show today. I'm also seeing some stuff from practice today, too. Keon Coleman looking good with Allen. Dawson Knox, as Sal mentioned, he's looked pretty good today as he's coming back. And now we go back to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio again joins us. Sal, we lost you there.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sometimes we have connection issues with everything going on out here. So you guys were asking me about Tyrell Shavers. You said he's my guy for something.
Yeah, just like the last two camps, he's kind of been like your guy. You've really looked at him. I was just mentioning there, too.
Yeah.
He looks the part of an NFL receiver. It literally just might be they have too many bodies for him to really kind of break out.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I think he's good enough to play in the NFL, but what's his ceiling, right? He offers you just enough where you can use him, but does he offer you enough to be a regular contributor for 17 games? I think Tyrell Shavers had a really, really strong camp last year, enough that I thought he might make the team. I think he's done some nice things out here, but it is a numbers game at wide receiver, right? You got Elijah Moore, Joshua Palmer's been brought in, obviously. He is kind of that sixth guy. Maybe he does squeeze in on the fifth as the fifth wide receiver. Then who's out? Do you keep six? There's always that way you need to massage it and think about it. But the biggest news with him is it's just so good to see him out here and being able to, come out here and catch passes after what happened the other day and going carted off with that ankle injury.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually, now the Bills have had two of those moments in camp. You mentioned Shavers there. It sounded like that was going to be a bad injury. Ultimately turned out to not be, and then not really to bury the lead here. But yesterday we did get reports, you were able to confirm it as well, that Max Harrison, his ACL is intact, but he is probably going to miss a few weeks with an LCL sprain.
Yeah, the Bills usually don't give any definitive timelines on injuries. I wouldn't expect them to give one here, but Ian Rappaport says about 3 weeks. I can confirm it is not an ACL injury. It's an LCL injury. All good news considering how bad it looked, how bad it could have been, the video that we saw, no doubt about that. So what does that mean for Max Harrison? Well, it means that even if he's back before the opener, is he even healthy? Is he even a healthy active for the opener, game day active, or is he a healthy scratch? It takes time for these rookies to come back. Look at Cole Bishop
yes.
Last year, missing some time in preseason. And it exponentially grows when you're a young player, a rookie especially, and you miss time. I also think it just means what we've kind of seen out here, which is Tre'Davious White is the starting corner opposite Christian Benford. I don't think that changes now. It even makes it more so, obviously. I don't think that would have changed even if that were the case with Tre'Davious White. So, Max Harrison now has some time to, get back, and they can take their time with him if they want to choose to put him on one of the lists of the they get two guys to go on IR when cuts are made to, sit out 4 weeks. They have a roster spot. You can bring him back if they choose to do that. At the same time, maybe he's back in a couple weeks. He starts working real hard, and he's ready to rock and roll week one. So it's a waiting game, but just like Tyrell Shavers, it is great to see and know that at least it's not something really serious long term.
Yeah, absolutely. So you brought up Cole Bishop there, and I spent a lot of the first segment kind of mentioning that like we kind of just went through this as Bills fans last year, a high draft pick. There was maybe hopes that he would start right from the get-go, but would have to battle to do it. But Cole Bishop misses about 3 weeks with a shoulder injury. We'll see how long Harrison is able to miss. But at least for Bishop, what we saw last year, it really kind of held back his development of him really ever able to get play time. His snap count was very low for the defense for a lot of the year. Did ultimately start game four, but that was a lot due to injuries. But by the end of the year, he was able to pick it up and get going. But it took a little while. I will say, though, it felt like the safety room, was asking for a little bit more, and it was kind of frustrating Bishop couldn't get in, where from everything I've heard from you and from many other reporters, the cornerback room, that is not the same situation. Tre White has looked very, very good. Benford is locked in at cornerback one. So it's not apples to oranges, but I did think about that.
Yeah, safety is a spot this year where, again, you're looking at I'm watching Cole Bishop on a sleeve right now. He's got a quad injury. And safety is an area where you're going to have to – you're a little bit more thin than you are at corner, I think, this year. And you hope that Cole Bishop can snatch that job and stay healthy. Corner, as you say, a little bit different with depth. They went out and attacked it. They brought it back Tre'Davious White. They brought back Dane Jackson. They still have Jamarcus Ingram. They drafted Dorian Strong. I don't think the Bills are hitting any sort of – even if, worst-case scenario, where Max Harrison were out very long-term, I don't think the Bills would have to go out and get somebody to be at the top of the depth chart. You're talking about numbers. You're talking about depth at the bottom now. But I think they feel comfortable with some of the guys that have been here and what they're doing. The rookie Dorian Strong, he's coming along, but, he has his ups and downs every day, but that's part of being a rookie. Dane Jackson knows this system. Jamarcus Ingram knows this system. They're very comfortable putting those guys in the field.
Sal Capaccio here on the West Hur Hotline, live from Bills training camp today. They had off yesterday, back today. Tomorrow is their return of the red and blue practice over at Highmark Stadium. Sal, I did have a question from a listener today, Joshua. He tweeted in, and this is a player I've actually at times kind of forgotten to talk about. I've really zeroed in on the defensive tackles, specifically with the defensive line. But he was mentioning, you know, not hearing a lot about Landon Jackson. What have you been able to see from the Bills' third-round pick?
Yeah, I haven't really noticed him flashing necessarily, but I think he's out here just kind of doing his job. I'm also telling you that I'm not looking and going, oh, man, Landon Jackson got beat bad on that play. You know, he's part of a rotation on the defensive line. And, you know, Bobby Babich talked a little bit about the rookies today. He was specifically talking about T.J. Sanders. And I think the word is consistency. You just want to see the consistency from these young guys. You know, Landon Jackson's at a position, too, where there's just quite a few bodies there. And you talk about A.J. Epenesa, along with, obviously, Greg Rousseau and Joey Bosa, I think, at the top of the depth chart. You're talking about A.J. Epenesa. Michael Hoyt's suspended, but, guys, Javon Solomon's putting together a nice little camp, you know, and that's a guy that Bobby Babich talked about today. So, of course, Landon Jackson's going to be on the Buffalo Bills roster. He's on the 53-man roster, but this is the kind of guy that could you see maybe, is he inactive, you know, first couple weeks or something like that? I'm not necessarily predicting it. I'm saying with the numbers, they have to figure it out somehow because you're just going to have too many bodies there at some point as long as everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it there with the cornerback room, how many guys they have, and like even if Harrison was out for long term, they maybe don't go to that well to maybe bring back a guy like a Russell Douglas or Stephon Gilmore. They maybe just they stay in house and they got what they got. They've really gone after depth hard on the defense as a whole. Because you're right, like the line itself, they've got so many guys, and it's not even to mention that Hoyt and Ogunjobi both will be coming back after week six. It is just chock full of guys. I listened to Albert Breer, who was at practice on Tuesday, and he mentioned that as just like that alone should probably help the Bills be better in the pass rush because of just how many guys they have. The best guys will likely be playing.
And the thing, right, the last three a lot in the playoffs, especially quarterback, getting the quarterback on the ground. They need to have a better pass rush, there's no doubt. I'm interested to see how the preseason reps go, knowing Hoyt and Ogunjobi are suspended guys. Like, are they going to give them more of the reps because they're going to be kind of fresher and they can keep the reps off the other guys who have to play? Or is it the other way around, which is, hey, these guys aren't going to be playing with us, you know, the first 6 weeks, so we got to make sure everybody else is ready. I'm really, really curious to see how that goes, starting a week from Saturday against the New York Giants.
Yeah, and I said it earlier today, too. Like, there isn't a ton of, like, starter battles to watch, and you can argue maybe there isn't, like, right, you know, that fun rookie quarterback that you got to lock in for all three games. But there's enough storylines, I think, in this preseason to get you through that, to not have you by, you know, the second one going, oh, gosh, we're still doing this, you know, that stuff. But speaking of the preseason, Sal, tonight, the Hall of Fame game, are you somebody that takes part in the American tradition of getting excited for it, saying football's back, and then two drives in, putting on a movie?
I do get excited to say it. Mm-hmm. It sounds good. I mean, I don't know if I'll watch much of it. I got a couple things going on tonight, but I'll check in on it every once in a while. I'll go look at highlights, you know, just and say, oh, I want to get back in football and say, okay, starting this week, guys. That means
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Sal, we'll let you get back to practice here. We're having some connection issues here, but thanks for jumping on with us, man.
You got it.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Hur Hotline. And I do want to remind you that Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page. That is brought to you by Upstate Honda Dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. 803-0550, the number to call. Are you going to take part in the Hall of Fame game? Are you somebody like me that the moment you saw Trey Lance was starting, you're like, oh, damn, I'm going to have to actually watch some of that, aren't I? We'll see how much I actually get through, though. Zach Jones here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Quick final segment here as we wrap up hour number one. I want to remind you, tune in this week for a chance to win two tickets to the Buffalo Bisons home game on Saturday, August 2nd, that is this Saturday, at Salem Field at 6:35 p.m. Celebrate women in sports, plus a post-game drone show. Always love a good drone show. Speaking of baseball, today is the trade deadline in Major League Baseball at 6 p.m. tonight. Got going early, though. If you did miss it, Toronto trading for right-handed pitcher Shane Bieber. Former Cy Young winner back in 2020. He dealt with Tommy John surgery last year. It's a one-for-one going to Cleveland. Cal Stevens, the number five-ranked prospect for the Blue Jays, going to Cleveland. But to get Shane Bieber, 30 years old, coming off of Tommy John, look good in his rehab assignment, you want to call it, that could be a huge move for them. They are still in front of the AL East. The Yankees have also made a number of moves as well. Ryan McCann, Austin Slater, I think they've added somebody else as well. The Jays also get a bullpen arm in Sir Anthony Dominguez. That has been a lot of fun to kind of watch, not even necessarily that battle, but just see the Blue Jays, who I think had like no expectations, or at least pretty bad expectations, coming into the season. They get the Guerrero deal done. They kind of have a slow start, get really going in the start of the summer, and then it just kind of kept it going. Now, being buyers here at the deadline, it is just a ton of fun, and I would love for playoff baseball to get back to Toronto. I've been there the last 2 years to see a game. I am a Halos fan, so I go to see the Angels, but it's a good ballpark. It was packed both times I went on a random Saturday or Sunday in the middle of summer. And it's a good crowd. It's a good, fun team. And it's not exactly what you thought it would be. It wasn't, all three of the young guys coming up, but it's enough of that. And then they've also just made savvy moves that have kept them, good going into this year. Didn't know that they would be, but they are. And now it appears they're adding who could be potentially an ace for them for the next few years in Shane Bieber. 803-0550, the number two call. Hour number two coming up after a quick timeout. We will listen back to Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich, who spoke to the media after practice at around 11:30. You're listening to WGR.
I want guys to have fun playing in the preseason, have at it. Winning is an important thing. My memories of preseason, some of my most favorite memories are from the preseason. You played good, team won. You made a name for yourself. The opportunity is, it's like somebody's handing you this opportunity, hope for all guys that they come out of this game like Tony Jefferson came out of the Cowboys game last year. Trayvon Morris Brash, his play, him scoring a touchdown, just the juice that football gives you.
Chargers head coach Jim Harbaugh, forgotten Victor Cruz there as well, made a name for himself in the preseason. I think he was wearing number 3 at the time for the Giants when he kind of broke out and then eventually goes to number 80. Got a few years there out of him. Chargers are interesting. They are playing in the Hall of Fame game tonight against the Detroit Lions. Game time at 8 o'clock in Canton, Ohio. Trey Lance, we know, is going to be the starting quarterback for the Chargers. That clip alone makes me think that Lance might be playing a lot tonight. That Harbaugh mentioned making a name for yourself. Now I could absolutely envision Lance plays a ton tonight. On the Chargers as a whole, though, and really, I guess maybe the whole AFC West, I wonder which of the Chargers and Denver takes that step forward. Because I think the Chiefs are somewhat susceptible. I think they are a little bit, not weaker, but just time gets everybody. Eventually, another team arrives and fights you a little bit. It could be 20 years down the road. Look at the Patriots. But it also could be, like the NFC East, where a team like Philadelphia looks untouchable, and maybe this year Washington beats them. You never know. But both the Chargers and the Broncos made the playoffs last year and have added. I like the Chargers draft, at least the first two rounds. Amarian Hampton and Trey Harris both are pretty good weapons. They add to that offense that really did need additions. The passing game outside of Ladd McConkey was not very good. The run game was fine, especially because you do have a Greg Roman run offense. But now you add that little bit extra. What do they have? Herbert is such a curious case study as a quarterback. He is a very good quarterback. He threw for 5,000 yards. He's been to the playoffs multiple times. He's big. He's athletic. He's kind of cool, calm, and collected. But he does tend to unravel at times, at very weird times, too. It's not just in the playoffs. He's only had 2 playoff games. But it's in just kind of random moments where he'll look incredible and then, all right, what just happened? Now, you do wonder, is it the Chargers, the talent around him, the coaching? Maybe, probably a little bit of it. But it's not that long ago that Herbert was considered this guy that, man, if he was just on a better team, he's on the same tier as Allen, Lamar, Mahomes, Burrow, no question. Now 2, maybe 3 years after that, it's a question.
It's much more of a, yeah, I don't really know about that. I like him. I don't know if I love him. And that's sort of where I sit. He does kind of everything I'd want my quarterback to do. Again, he's big, athletic, cool, kind of collected guy, kind of a little bit of a nerd in almost that sense. But he hasn't really taken that next step. Now, to be fair, it's kind of hard for him. He hit the ground running to start. 15 games his rookie year, over 4,000 yards passing, 31 touchdowns, 10 picks. He's great from the word go. The next year he throws 5,000 yards, 38 touchdown passes. Then the next 3 years, it's, you know, 4,700 yards passing, 25 touchdowns. Only plays 13 games the next year, but it's 3,100 yards, 20 touchdowns, 7 picks. And then last year, under 4,000 yards, but they're 11-6, and he only throws 3 picks. However, he then throws more than that in the playoff game against Houston. Houston, by the way, doing that 2 years in a row. Chargers and then Cleveland the year prior, where they just absolutely kill a quarterback that had been hot up to that point. He throws 4 picks, and they're just not really in the game. Now, a lot of it, too, was the receivers weren't very good, but he in particular wasn't very good either. I'm not going to give him a complete break for that. And so the Chargers have become a team like Harbaugh freaks me out, Jim Harbaugh. I think the guy just knows how to win football games. Just flat out. Doesn't even have to have a great team. He's going to win football games. But you look around the AFC West, it is loaded with coaches that just happen to win games. Pete Carroll with Vegas. Harbaugh, as I mentioned, with the Chargers. Peyton with the Broncos. And then, does it even need to be said, Andy Reid in Kansas City. They're all just really good coaches, if not Hall of Famers. So now I look at the Chargers as we get closer and closer to the regular season, and I wonder, are they really going to be that scary of a team with Harbaugh? Because I like Denver better. I like Denver far better, if we're just asking talent-wise. That defense is incredible. They already have the Defensive Player of the Year in Patrick Surtain. Now they add a guy like Jahdae Barron into that secondary. Their line was phenomenal. I think my only issue with Denver is, you know, what do you actually have in terms of offensive firepower? Because Bo Nix had a very good rookie season, but we've also seen those rookie seasons, those very good, hey, they're here, they've arrived. We've also kind of seen it not take off. The second year is a bit more of a struggle. I look at their wide receiver room. Yeah, they just pay Cortland Sutton. He's pretty good. Am I expecting a lot from Marvin Mims or Pat Bryant? Troy Franklin didn't do anything last year, and he was with Bo Nix in college. They add Evan Ingram. You think he's fine? Not great. And running back room, it's R.J. Harvey, J.K. Dobbins. But that defense is so good. And I trust Sean Payton enough because, as I mentioned, earlier today with Keon Coleman, I mentioned I listened to Albert Breer, I think like his 5 thoughts on what he saw on Tuesday from Bills camp. He mentioned Keon Coleman, and he mentioned the Bills are going to look for him to fill like that Marcus Colston kind of role. Marcus Colston was a 7th round pick, and in his rookie year, he had over 1,000 yards with Sean Payton as his coach and Drew Brees as his quarterback. So as much as I used to give Sean Payton a little bit more grief, I think he deserved a little bit more flack for the ending of his time in New Orleans, especially at the time. A lot of Bills fans were banging the drum to bring in Peyton, and it was because of the playoff failures. And I'm like, man, were you guys not paying attention to the New Orleans Saints the last 5-6 years? Like, that's who he was. He's just on the offense. But it was bad playoff failures. Some his fault, some not. This is also a team that lost to Kirk Cousins in Minnesota in a playoff game. But I do still have to respect that he is still a very, very good coach. He is that 100%. The AFC West, I think, should be awesome this year. I think it should be a blast. We've said that, though, a few times with these divisions that were just like, oh, man, put every divisional game on pay-per-view. I'll pay for it. Let's go all of them on primetime. The AFC West was a part of this. You know, when Russell Wilson first got traded to Denver and you had Herbert already there and Carr was with Vegas and then, of course, the Chiefs. And you're like, this is a fireworks show. Look how amazing this is. And it's a wet fart. It's terrible. Russell Wilson is not good at all in Denver. The Chargers are, in fact, the Chargers. And the Raiders, don't have like that weird win or two every year, but the last, you know, decade and a half, outside of two seasons, they're a pretty useless franchise for the most part. It's been the Chiefs running the show. I mean, they've won, 15 division titles in a row? Something absurd like that. But this year, I do feel like maybe they won't win, but I do like the Denver Broncos to really give them a fight. And I could absolutely be wrong on the Chargers as well, especially if Amarian Hampton and Trey Harris hit and Herbert kind of takes another step with Harbaugh there. Could be big for them. And then all of a sudden, and this is why I brought up the Bills with the one seed and why I think it's such a big year for the Bills because of how everything else is shaking out, right? Every year for them is a big year with Josh Allen at quarterback. That doesn't need to be said. But I think in particular, there are some years where it's more exciting. There's more interest. And this is one of those years. The AFC East is not very good. The Dolphins look to be potentially in a tailspin. The Jets are fully restarting. And we'll see about the Patriots. Although I heard Sneaky Joe bring up some of the reports from Patriots camp. They're inconsistent at best on offense. And Drake May's accuracy has been a bit of an issue. I think it's also fair to say, looking at the second-year quarterbacks, not everyone's going to progress. Some of those guys will take a step back. Maybe it is May. Also brought up, it could be Bo Nix, because you look at that wide receiver room, and you have to wonder who he's throwing the ball to consistently outside of Cortland Sutton, who is good but not great. Then you have the AFC North. Baltimore will be good. Cincinnati, though, their defense, I don't think has gotten any better. And Trey Hendrickson, while has reported, has still not signed his new contract. And he's been pretty firm in the fact that he won't play under his current contract. I don't know if that's totally changed now that he's reported. But even with them there, they were still a bad defense. And he had 17 and a half sacks. That speaks volumes. Al Golden, though, is an interesting hire for them at defensive coordinator. Pittsburgh will probably be their 9-8 team. They'll probably steal a game or two from everybody in the division, likely. But they won't be the massive threat. But it points to the Bills in the AFC East having a much easier time on paper to be able to be a real contender in the one seed conversation. Again, albeit again. But the problem has been teams like Baltimore or Kansas City just don't slip up for an entire year. And in part, their division rivals don't hurt them. Burrow, 2 years ago, was injured. It's Jake Browning. Cleveland, bad. Steelers, not good. For years with Kansas City, the division slips all over itself and Kansas City is able to just run away with it. They were able to last year, mainly due to luck, but they were still able to last year. And then the South, look, Tennessee got the one seed a few years ago and it didn't mean much. And it's hard for me to point to any of those teams. Even Houston, with how good their defense is, that offensive line is horrific. I don't know if that's going to be better, worse, the same. I think it could be all three, but I'm pointing more towards either the same or worse, and that's not good enough. Denver is the team, though, that I'm starting to zero in on. But it entirely depends on if Bo Nix is able to take a step forward and if they do have enough on offense. They look like a team that could be a real problem. And they sort of, 2 years ago, I thought this with Green Bay. In the NFC, Green Bay gets the 7 seed. They're the only team with the 7 seed to win a playoff game in this era against Dallas. They blow them out. Jordan Love's awesome. I really like how they're building their wide receiver room. I still do, by the way, getting Matthew Golden. But they haven't taken that step forward. Part of that last year was Jordan Love got hurt early, and he just kind of never got into a rhythm. And he's a little bit of a wild horse anyways. There are games where he's just making throws that three guys in the world can make. There are other days where he's attempting those throws, and it's not a good idea. But I thought this way about Green Bay about 2 years ago when they lose in the NFC divisional game, that it was just like, okay, like they're going to arrive next year. Like this was their announcement to the world that they're back, that Love is, at worst, the Jeff Garcia of the Green Bay Packers. Next year's going to be their year. And it wasn't. I sort of am feeling that same way about Denver. Now I want to see, is there that linear progression for this team? I think there absolutely can be. And now I look years down the road, they're starting to become a team I look at as we need to start mentioning them in the Baltimore, Kansas City, if you want them still Bengals discussion. The Bills got through the Broncos last year pretty convincingly. There's one big play to start the game, not great, and then afterwards the Bills kind of blow them out. But it's not going to be the same team year after year. The Bills have had close wild card games against worse teams. And the Broncos, with Peyton, with Knicks, and that defense could be a real problem going forward. But they're a bigger problem for teams like Kansas City. Kelce is getting older. Jones is getting older. We'll see what happens in the future with Worthy and Rice and Jalen Royals. But they are not always going to be the top dog. The Patriots really, in a certain extent, got free reign over the AFC East. None of those teams could figure out the quarterback position. Not one in that era. The two that had the best shot at it were Chad Pennington for 15 minutes with Miami and arguably the same thing with New York and Mark Sanchez. And Sanchez was really only even marketably good in the playoffs. Good on him, but that was really about it. It was his first 2 years. After that, it's a tire fire. The Patriots got carte blanche on the AFC East for 20 years because no one else in the division could figure out quarterback. They just simply couldn't. That is not true now in the AFC West. If the Chargers figure out the rest of their issues, they have the quarterback. I'm up and down on Herbert, but they've got him. He's good enough. You've seen some of those games against the Chiefs. He's good enough to go toe-to-toe with them. And the same is true with the Broncos and Bo Nix. And that was his rookie year. If they don't have a blocked kick, they beat him in Arrowhead. Was that game in Arrowhead? May have been in Denver. Regardless, if they get that kickoff, they probably beat them there. Should be a lot of fun in the AFC this year. And in part, it should be a lot of fun as Bills fans because, well, the AFC East, you look around and it's just, you know, there's nothing really here. To be fair, it almost is kind of like the AFC East when the Patriots are running the show. We don't know yet about Drake May. Tua, I think, is just good enough to be a starting caliber quarterback, but nothing more. You saw when they had a moment to take the division when the Bills were really down 2 years ago. They couldn't. They collapsed down the stretch. And then the Jets, I mean, it's Fields this year. We'll see what it's going to be next year. I imagine they're going to absolutely take one of these quarterbacks that are coming out this year. And there's a lot of quarterbacks coming out this year, I would imagine. There's a lot of good ones as well. They will likely be doing that. But that's where it's going to be fun for Bills fans, is that you look around the rest of the AFC and you wonder, man, do we got the easiest road going forward? And it could get even easier, as I've mentioned in the first hour, if they have some of these young guys really take that step forward. If Cole Bishop locks down the safety position, of course, missing today with a quad injury. Cornerback depth better this year. Defensive line much better this year, potentially. They may finally have, I think, more talent than a lot of these teams. That, for me, has maybe been the biggest issue for the Bills over the last few years. They have not had the closing talent. They've had good guys that you can absolutely make the playoffs with. You can absolutely win a Super Bowl with, unless you're going up against the dynasty of your era. That's your holdback. That's what's holding you back. Now I think they maybe have enough of these guys that maybe they don't have one guy. They don't have their Chris Jones. They don't have their Travis Kelce. But like in Moneyball, maybe they're just building them through multiple people. If the defensive line can really come at you in waves with TJ Sanders and Hoyt and Ogunjobi and Rousseau and Oliver and Epinesa, Javon Solomon, who I know Bobby Babich will be listening back to in just about 10 minutes or so, said he thinks he's having, he's worlds better than last year. Maybe you build them through the aggregate, plus having your all-world quarterback. I hate saying that it feels Super Bowl or bust for any team because it leads you to being almost definitely disappointed in a season. There's 32 teams, one of them wins it, right? We all know that. But we are getting to the end of the train station here. The Greyhound is pulling in pretty soon. And I liked what they've done in the draft this year. I like what they've done in their free agency moves. Now, for me, it really does just come down to, do the young guys pop, and do we have potentially some closers on this team? Again, they maybe have to build them in the aggregate, but maybe as well, you have a guy like Christian Benford, better help opposite him, he becomes that kind of guy. Does Bernard become that guy? He has been a heat-seeking missile for the ball, and he dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Missing games. I think he played a 13 in the regular season. Because if he's all of a sudden got Milano, who's playing at all-pro level, next to him, maybe he's that guy. I think he absolutely can be. Maybe he should be the guy we're talking about, not Ed or Rousseau or Benford. Maybe it is Bernard, because he's the guy that makes the big plays. The punch out against Mark Andrews. That was the big thing when he first took the starting middle linebacker role. Was Edmonds just, he was always just a step too slow to get to the ball, to make that big play. But he was good enough to be a starting middle linebacker. And then they bring in Bernard, and any of those issues are gone. He is a big play guy that shuts down games. He gets turnovers. That's a big calling card for the defense. We know that absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Your thoughts on the Bills, what you're looking for in the preseason. I've mentioned that as well. For me, at least, it's going to be a lot of the young guys and what's going on at the defensive line, at cornerback. Talking with Sal Capaccio a little bit ago, and we did talk about like cornerback and the fact that even if Maxwell Harrison, who has not picked up a major injury, it's an LCL sprain, likely a few weeks, not season ending by any means. There's a good chance he'll be ready to go by week one. But he'll miss a good bit of camp here. We mentioned that even if he had gone down for a major injury, they've loaded so many corners onto this roster. Guys that have been on the team before that they probably don't go the route they do with some positions where you find out the next day, oh, they brought this wide receiver in on a workout. They brought this linebacker in on a workout. Why? Well, this guy's going to be down for a few weeks. They don't have that problem. They are loaded at corner. Where a guy like Dane Jackson, who knows the system and has been here for a few years, might be battling for a job on the roster. Dorian Strong is a late-round pick out of Virginia Tech, and he's been a guy already that is getting some headlines from Bills reporters who have been at camp this whole time. And Jordan Hancock as well, I know, has gotten a shout-out from defensive coordinator Bobby Babich, mentioning how he's looked and the versatility he is going to offer this defense. It's going to be enough to watch, I think, on this team. To have some storylines. Again, you're not going to have that rookie quarterback that you have to. It's a planned event. You've got to be in your lazy boy 10 minutes before because you got to get ready to watch this guy and every throw he's going to make. It's not that. But we know where the Bills' issues were last year, and they addressed every one of them in bulk for many of them. And yeah, you can only take so much from preseason, right? They're in a way meaningless games. They don't count. Guys won't be going full bore. You're not going to be dealing with a lot of starters, right? But if I see TJ Sanders, Deion Walker being real problems for opposing defenses, I'm going to start getting excited. That is just a fact. Because if they get any of that going on the defensive line, this is a team that will be back in the AFC Championship. They just will be. They have an all-world quarterback. Allen is simply too talented to not be a threat for that every year on him alone. So if they had anything in the pass rush, this team could be hellraisers all year. They beat Mahomes and the Chiefs a few times in this run here if they got any pass rush. They almost got it with Von Miller. You saw how it looked in the regular season game. They don't have him at the end of the year. He tears his ACL on Thanksgiving. But maybe they've now built that guy through the aggregate in bulk of just having a number of guys that can come at you in waves. And that's not even to mention that maybe somebody like a TJ Sanders is a home run for them in the second round. 803-0550, the number to call. I have mentioned it. We will listen back to Bills defense coordinator Bobby Babich. We'll do that after a quick timeout. But I do want to remind you that you can listen to our station all week for a chance to win a pair of grandstand tickets to NASCAR's Cup Series weekend from Friday, August 8th to Sunday, August 10th at Watkins Glen International. The Go Bowling at the Glen brings the drivers of the NASCAR Cup Series to battle it out around the historic New York road course. Tickets are on sale for the entire NASCAR weekend at theglen.com. Zach Jones hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones hanging out with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Of course, it's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Hall of Fame game is tonight. Chargers and Lions playing in Canton. If you don't know, the Hall of Fame class for this year, Eric Allen, Jared Allen, Antonio Gates, and Sterling Sharp. Tonight's game is going to get going at 8 o'clock. I also heard Brett Musburger is going to be part of the broadcast as well in the second half. That might force me to watch a little bit of the second half or at least see the highlights on Twitter. I know for a fact I will find something of his broadcast on Twitter, but a part of me, in the moment, may want to wait to see him come on. I love Brett Musburger. I kind of grew up like towards the end of like his career, and he was just like that was one of the voices, especially for college football. Many have listened to me know I'm a massive college football junkie. He was one of those guys when I was growing up. Also, do want to remind you that as we get ready to listen back to Bills defense coordinator Bobby Babich, the coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Figu Car and Joyce, your border attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Now, we go back to before practice began as Bills DC Bobby Babich spoke with the media.
Mess of shoes.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. Though. Thank you.
I like that the road color though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just like the fact that we're talking about my what I'm wearing and not the defense. Can I say something real quick, Maddie? Where's Vic? Is Carucci
here?
He's not here today. We share the same birthday, so our birthday was yesterday. I was going to say happy birthday, but it wasn't about me. It was about Vic. It was about Vic. No. I was looking for Vic. I didn't see him yet. So go ahead, Maddie. I'm sorry.
We're recording. You still wish him happy birthday.
Yeah, Vic, happy birthday. Wherever you are out in the...
Since the pads have gone on, what has impressed you about your group?
You know, I mean, I think the best thing I could say is this. We got a lot of things to improve on, whether you talk about fundamentally, individually, per player, or whatever that is. But when you look at the big picture, like when you close your eyes and kind of, you know, you want to see what it looks like in the pads is, you know, I think we've said it for years, you know, we want to win the line of scrimmage, you know, and we're certainly battling our offense for that line of scrimmage and we're doing a good job. And then the physicality piece of things, I think the best thing to say is that during our tenure here and, you know, a lot of us have been here 9 years. I shouldn't say a lot of us. I don't know how many are left. But, you know, it's always been an emphasis, and it's part of our philosophy and all those type of things. But I think the short duration of when we arrived to showing up physically, that was good. But it doesn't matter, you know, how early you do it. It's that you do it consistently, and that's what we're looking for. So those are a couple of things.
Football. So are you able on the practice tape evaluation to determine
right.
Right. Holding them up so your linebackers can run free and hit? Or
yeah, I mean,
tough to discern.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would disagree on you with the fact that it's not full. We are full speed. We're just not taking dudes to the ground. And then sometimes you see I got to yell at our guys because they're taking guys to the ground. You know what I mean?
The question is, how free are they keeping your linebackers to run and hit those?
Yeah, I mean, we just talk about doing our 1-11th. It's not, we're not teaching. Everybody's got a key and everybody's got a technique that they're supposed to perform on every play. Whatever that causes, you know, whether you're keeping linebackers free or they decide to free release on a run the O-line to the second line or to the second level, excuse me. It's just everybody identifying their key and doing their job. You know, like I just said, if they want a free release to the second level, that means the defensive line has one-on-ones in a run game. So the expectation is that, yes, you control your primary gap, but we got to be able to also, like, we got to get to the ball and tackle the football. That's the whole goal, is tackle the football without them gaining any yards in the run game, keep it elementary, right? So I think everybody is honing in on their 111th. We certainly have a lot of room to grow, but I would say that we're treating this as full-speed, game-like reps. That's the message that we send our guys. It's just don't take them to the ground yet.
We know that Max is going to be missing some time.
Yep.
In your experience, what is the key for a young player, a rookie, who misses time early to be able to get back and kind of be where he needs to be at that point, if that makes sense?
Right. I mean, we've dealt with it. We've dealt with it over the years. I mean, I can think back to when I was a linebacker coach with TB, right? You know, and then TB missed the entire preseason, you know. And, you know, we had a plan in place, and, you know, we certainly have walkthroughs. We have things that he can do during practice and those type of things when he's available to be able to do those things. You know, but it's hard to simulate game speed. You can't simulate the physicality of the NFL, so certainly going to be an adjustment period there, but we'll have a plan, and it'll be well thought out and be rocking and rolling.
For TP, though, he had a year in the system before he missed that part of camp.
True.
For a rookie, how hard is this foundational part of the season to miss that he's going to have to be out for a while?
Yeah, it's tough, but the NFL is not worried about us and trying to get him caught up. So we're going to do everything we can to make sure he's ready to go and can perform. Certainly we've got to be creative in the ways we go about it. But between Joe Dana, Jamil, myself, we'll definitely have a plan and we'll do the best we can to get him ready to go. Certainly, you know, like I said earlier, one of our goals is to prosper in adversity. And certainly this is a case of adversity and we need to prosper. We can't hang our heads.
Bobby, how you go up to him as he was coming off the field with that injury? What's kind of been your conversations with him like, and how has he responded?
Yeah, I think with all players, you know, they want to be available. They don't want to let their teams down. We talk about being a good teammate and, you know, the competitive nature. Sean and Brandon do a great job of identifying those players as we acquire them. But the biggest thing that I tell any guy that potentially would be facing adversity with injury is don't let negative thoughts get in your head. You know, whatever you believe in, but I do believe that negativity in your mind can certainly affect your recovery process. And it's, hey, stay positive, take it minute by minute, day by day, rehab session by rehab session. And when you're ready to go, we're ready to go. But you try to think too far ahead, oh, I'm going to be out there. No, literally just worry about today. Worry about what we're doing right here.
How valuable is it to have depth at the position, but also depth in guys that have started games for you, have been in this system, that you kind of know what you're getting when you put out there in Jamarcus today?
You're talking about corner?
Yeah.
I mean, I really, and I'll say it, I really love the competition in that room and the depth in that room. There's a lot of skins on the wall in that room, per se. There's a lot of youth that we're excited about. So, I mean, I've said it before, we don't flinch. Like, next man up. You know, next man slides right up, and, you know, for instance, Dorian's going to have to get more reps, Dorian Strong, and that's what it is. And our expectation is that the expectation for every player is the same, you know, in our eyes, that we set for him. Not for no offense to you guys, not for what you set for him, not for what Bill's. We've got to stay inside our building, and we'll set those expectations, and they're certainly high, but they know what they are. So, you know, it's certainly good to have those guys here.
Hey, Bobby, with Jordan Hancock behind the scenes, how does he split his time, if at all, between nickel and safety? And how has he done in that, picking it up?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a plan where we started him one way. We've kind of moved him another way. And then we're going to try to get to a happy medium of where we're at. But it's hard on him. It's hard on him. You know, and that's fine. I've said it all the time. We want to create a sense of urgency and a little bit of chaos for those rookies. So it's hard early. And then once they start to gain repetition, it starts to calm down. So, you know, we have a plan, like I said before. Don't need to go into a lot of detail with it, but there's certainly a plan.
Culture past kind of the halfway point. What have you noticed from TJ from the start of camp until now?
We're past the halfway point. Jeez. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Yeah, I mean, it's consistency. We need, you know, TJ's talented. We all know that. Like, he knows that. Everybody knows that. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But what we're looking for him is the consistency day in and day out. And really, like I said earlier, it's just read your key, use your technique, and we'll go from there. But we've got to make sure there's enough leeway for him to use his God-given ability, which there's ability there. So we just need to make sure we're getting that consistency out of him.
Where are you in terms of Dan Walker? Ed Oliver said that he's a dancing bear. He's a big guy on ballerina legs.
Yep.
Is it crazy to see how big of a human being he can be in the way he moves?
I mean, I've said it multiple times. I mean, people that are his size shouldn't be able to do some of the things he does. But again, just like TJ, we need to see consistency, because if we don't get the dancing bear, you know, all that type of stuff, it doesn't matter. So, you know, we need to make sure that consistency is in there. And I get it. He's talented, but, you know, this is the NFL. Everybody's talented. So, you know, certainly he's got some God-given ability, but he needs to do his 111th for us.
Where have you seen improvement from Javon Solomon? What excites you about what he can bring in that pass rush?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen and I'll talk about him quick. I've seen a big jump from Javon from last year to this year, and I think he's doing some really good things out there. He's certainly pushing that group, and, you know, it's just he's a year more comfortable, right? Like, and he knows what to expect. He knows – you know, he knows going into the offseason what it is. It's not his first time listening to me in front of the defense. It's not his first time listening to Sean in front of the team. So he can hone in a little bit more on potentially mindset, going out every day to practice, locking in mentally. When you come out here as a rookie, sometimes it's wide-eyed, like, oh, what's going on here? You know, so he certainly has shown some things. We'll see where it goes.
We've seen some splash plays from Matt Milano so far this camp. What are you looking to see out of him? And, you know, how's he been responding so far?
Matt's great. Stay healthy. That's it.
Bobby, in terms of injured players, you said you want to make sure they take it minute by minute, not get into the sky is falling mentality. How do you approach that with players to make sure they are doing that?
And you're saying our defense in general, every player. Yeah, I think it's just constant reminders for us of what our expectations are of our guys. You know, and this goes back, like I've said it before, you learn from players, and, you know, you've got to, you know, even me as a coordinator, like you're looking ahead. That's part of the job. Like, okay, got to get ahead of things and make sure we're preparing for what we might see. But I think it's really important that the players, you do enough to make sure the players are right where they're at, whether that's constant reminders, whether that's, you know, honing in on the detail of every play, whatever it is. There's a lot of different ways you can go about it. Certainly the position coaches have different ways, and certainly I have different ways, but it's just constant reminders. It's just constant reminders of, you know, we're not thinking about the meetings after practice. You know, we're not thinking about the last period of practice today. We are focused on what's about to happen, and there should be guys out there early working on things, and we're only worried about that right now.
How impressed are you with what seems like a rapid ascension of leadership for Christian Benford, who, I mean, he played at a great level last year. Seems like he's improved a little bit this year. But just the way he seems to have the pulse of that room in what feels like a pretty quick amount of time.
Yeah, I don't think Christian Benford's changed. I think, you know, Christian Benford is not a man of many words, as we all know. Extremely smart, extremely intelligent. You know, and I think it's more like literally those young guys, I tell them all the time, and I show clips of CB, and I've said it before, CB does everything right, you know, 99% of the time. And that's the expectation for him. But it's going to be more for him of the young guys especially, or even when we're in defensive team meetings, of the D-line seeing him doing everything exactly right. He's not going to say a lot, but the examples he puts on tape is going to elevate the play of those around him, which – you know, that's leadership, elevating people around you, you know, and lifting up people around you. That's, to me, that's the definition of it. So, we good?
Thanks, Bobby.
That was Buffalo Bills defense coordinator Bobby Babich earlier this morning before practice. I did like that he kept it Short and sweet with Matt Milano. Matt's great. Stay healthy. That's it. And I think that's where most people feel with Milano. The Bills, in some ways, like they did with Trey White, have learned to live without Milano over the past 2 years, coming off his all-pro season. But now, I've talked with Sal a number of times on this. You've probably seen it on social media and heard other reporters talk about it. Milano's looked great. Does that mean he's going to be an all-pro again? Probably not, to be perfectly honest. He's 31, 30. You know, if he's dealt with injuries, maybe not. But also, he is one of those named guys for the Bills, and if he is in a good spot like he was 2 years ago, there could be a lot of fun, especially in that linebacker room when you add in a healthy Milano and a healthy Terrell Bernard. There could be fireworks for that group. 803-0550, the number two call. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. You're listening to WGR. Quick final segment here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Did mention in the first hour, today is the trade deadline in Major League Baseball, 6 p.m. deadline. The Padres have been very active today. I've already mentioned for the Blue Jays, they add Shane Beamer. It was a one-for-one. They sent Cal Stevens to Cleveland. Padres, though, they go to the A's, get closer Mason Miller and starting pitcher J.P. Sears. And now they may even be in on talks to get Stephen Kwan, although they're with a number of teams trying to get the two-time All-Star from Cleveland. I know the Dodgers as well, at least from John Heyman is saying that. And then also the Yankees could be involved today as well for the likes of Sandy Alcantara. They, though, from Heyman are competing along with the Astros, Cubs, Red Sox, and then he even says among teams in the Sandy Alcantara talks. We'll see if anything comes from that. But baseball deadline always seems to be a lot of fun, a lot of moving parts. Teams are much more willing to move off of prospects, I think, than other sports, which leads it to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of movement on days like today. Personally, as a Halos fan, I'd like to see them move guys like Taylor Ward or Luis Renjifo, but we'll see if that comes to pass. Also in baseball today, the Bisons are in action, 6:35 tonight. At home hosting the Mets. That game is over on our sister station, the Bet 1520. So do check that out if you're not going to be at the ballpark tonight. Also, want to remind you that coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher is brought to you by Figo Car and Joy Shore Border Attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. I have mentioned it a lot today. Tonight is the Hall of Fame game between the LA Chargers and the Detroit Lions. Trey Lance will be starting for the Chargers. I'm excited to see him. He is somebody I mentioned in the first hour. I liked him a lot when he was at North Dakota State. I felt bad for him when he kind of, it felt like didn't get a fair shake in San Francisco. It sort of felt like Shanahan never really wanted him. The big reports there was that he wanted Mac Jones. He finally has him now on his roster. And then I look at him too, like with a guy like Anthony Richardson, who, you know, has all the physical talent in the world, but seemingly the team that drafted him didn't have really a lot of patience with him. But he maybe, likely, didn't put himself in a great situation last year, of course, you know, sitting out, you know, for a play or two because he was tired. You know, that's not good at all. But we'll see, you know, what Lance looks like. He's a guy that I mentioned, too. He's had like 460 passing attempts since 2019. Didn't play in 2020 due to the pandemic. Sits most of 21 and then gets hurt right at the beginning of 22. Never really got to see what Trey Lance could be. And I'm perfectly honest, his career is not going anywhere. But he is also sort of the backup quarterback I wish the Bills would invest in. Just that uber athlete, if you figured him out, he could be a real nice trade piece. I love what the Eagles did years ago when they did have a lot of those young quarterbacks, not even just young, just quarterbacks that they could trade away, guys like Nick Foles, and use them really as a commodity to get a lot of draft picks. A lot like, too, when teams don't sign back certain players because, well, they're getting their compensatory pick and they know that's going to work for them. I love when teams like the Eagles did that. That's going to do it for me, though, today. I'll be back on tomorrow. But coming up next, Sabres Live. This is WGR.